Joel.
4-3-2.
Who's the best show here?
Hi, I said 4-3-2.
Who's the best show here?
Back show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I am short.
That's kind of fucking weird, but okay.
Big old showtime!
When you were making egg poo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the gas, you just get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a link it bad. But the strolling couldn't pick the DLNGS dialogue. And the IC channels are Linux, they found it. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 948 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Almost April.
We have Joel. We had Joel.
I'm here. Hello.
And we have Joe.
Hello.
And this is episode 948. And Joel got himself his son a new car. What was it again, Joel?
A 2022 Trailblazer RS.
Nice.
And this time it was only $2,500 above sticker because they had a $500 rebate and they had $3,000 above sticker on smaller cars this time. Two cars in this weird ass time. Who knew? But we really didn't have much of a choice either because it's like used cars and new cars are nearly the same price now, which is just stupid. And his car had an intermittent issue with the check engine light, and it started to recur. And it was off for 2 weeks, or 2 months, I should say. And then because it came back 2 months ago, it came on again, then went off, and then stayed off for a while. And then just beginning of this week, it came on again. And my wife and I did a quick search, found that there was a couple Trailblazers in stock over at our local Chevy dealer, went over there and was able to get one. I think he likes it so far. I haven't actually gotten to drive it yet. But I mean, it's very, very, it's basically like a smaller version of mine, and it's in red. So we got a red and a silver car now, but we'll see how it goes. I don't have to pay a payment next month, so that's good. But it's not going to be a pretty payment come May. But and ironically, I don't think his has any. Like a lot of the dealers are starting to, not dealers, the manufacturers, because of the chip shortage, were starting to do some deletes on some features that the vehicle normally would come with. Things like normally it would come with the heated seats, and because they didn't have the chip, they just took that off the car, stuff like that. So things like that it doesn't have on it. It doesn't have like my Traverse has the lift gate that I could open with a remote, but his doesn't have that. His is actually a manual lift gate, and I was talking to the salesman and apparently, you can only get the automatic liftgate on the Trailblazer if your car has a sunroof. And I'm like, yeah, I can live without it. But it's got the weird thing, too, is the seats have like, it's like they, like, have you ever seen how the seats are in like a Model 3 or a Model Y? They're like sitting on top of these two metal, I guess a bracket's probably covered in carpet. So, like, maybe 5-6 inches above the floor of the vehicle, which is kind of odd. But I'll tell you, for a small SUV, I actually sat in the back of it when we test drove it, and it actually has a lot of leg room. So I'm really impressed with it. It's like, it's between the track. Well, it's probably right a little bit bigger than a Trax, which is their smallest SUV. But then they got two others that are real similar in size. That would be the Equinox and the Blazer, which are stupid priced, you know, like $40,000-$50,000 for those. So this one, I'm not happy with what we paid for it, but I really didn't have a whole lot of choice. So
just unhappy.
I think so.
Is he gonna drive you to Hershey?
Oh no, we're driving in the Traverse. Traverse is a little bit more comfortable. Got a lot more features and stuff, you know.
I did not have the issues you had this week, Joel.
No.
My washing machine has been having had problems. No, it works perfectly fine when it runs. You know, it works perfectly fine when it runs. The problem is the switch on it. The push button for the front switch. Door? No. It's got this, like, it's kind of a weird switch. It's like a plunger, it feels like. It's small. It's about the size of a quarter. And it's a button that is a vinyl plastic button or rubber button, and it like sticks out, and it's almost like when you push it in, it's like a popper almost. It feels like, you know, those little poppers that you get to like shape like half a sphere, and you turn them inside out and put them on the ground. They pop, you know, when they go back in to the original shape, they pop up in the air. It looks a little like that, but what was happening is, and this started like not too long after we got it, that when you would push it in, the popper would get stuck in there on the side of like the panel, and I don't know what was happening, but I just assumed that it was just not a good fit and a bad design, and it would trigger the switch, but then it would stop it sometimes, like almost immediately, or it was like the pause button was being pressed, or it was causing it to it was just really right. Weird. So you have to keep pressing. So finally, you know, I took it apart a couple months ago, and I tried to adjust that button, and I thought everything was fine, but it started doing it worse and worse and worse, and it, you know, even with trying to fiddle around with it, it just wasn't fixing it. So I'm like, all right, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take the button off and see about pushing the lever directly, the component directly behind it. And when I did that, it seemed like it wasn't functioning very well and still having a problem. So no matter what I did, wasn't fixing it. And so eventually I was like, I have another washing machine in the garage.
Right.
You know what? It's time for this thing to go, right? Because I went and looked up the circuit board for it, or I thought
about
20, I did.
About, was it 20 or 30 years old?
No, it's not that old. It's like almost a decade old.
Okay.
It's not too old. And so I looked up, I just did a ballpark of the model and brand I thought, you know, of the brand I thought it was and close to the model, and was looking at costs. And I thought it was going to be $250, roughly. Right. And I'm like, this washing machine wasn't that much more expensive. I'm not going to invest that kind of money in there. So I had to lug the washing machine, out, bring the new one down, and switch it out. Now, I was going to put this out, and yesterday I was out for bulk pickup, and yesterday I was out there in the front yard, and the maintenance man stops by, and he's like, "What's wrong with the washing machine, Mr. Washko?" And I was like, "I tried to fix it, and it's just the circuit board's bad." He's like, "Those are cheap circuit boards." And I'm like, I looked it up, and it was like $250. Like, oh, it shouldn't be that expensive. And he's like, well, you got to do what you got to do, and then drove off. And then, like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, any minute bulk pickup's going to come pick this thing up. And I'm like, I have to look. So I actually got the model, looked it up. It's $82.50 is the price for the circuit board. And I was like, I don't know. That's a deal breaker right there. I can't throw this thing out over $82 when all I'd have to do is just swap out the circuit board.
Right.
So I lugged it into my garage, and now I got to order that circuit board part. But, man, that's the thing. It's like you look at that. It's like, yeah, if it was $250 on, I think this washing machine was only like $400-some. You're almost halfway there. What's the point? You know, I could fix it, but – anyway, so I just got to order the part and slap it in there. I got too many dryers and washers laying around. Because, you know, I learned my lesson, you know. If one of them breaks and I don't have the time or parts to fix it at the moment, I just swap it out. Just bring the other one back down here, and I'm still in business. I don't have to hit the laundromat. I don't have to worry about whether I can fix it right then and there. I just, there we go.
And if I had the time, I'd drive all the way to Virginia and take a couple off your heads for my father-in-law.
Yeah, the ones I rescued from the curb, they were fully functional too, man. That was like, woo! Don't get rid of that.
Well, you know what you can do if you have too many laptops? You can turn it into a Chromebook, like an honest-to-God one, not using Chromium O.
So, what... are the recommended specs for the laptop, though?
That's a good question. The laptop I have it on is my old Dell that was, I think it's 5-6 years old. So it runs fine on that. You know, hell, it's running Linux, so essentially, which is what Chrome OS is based on. And you just use the, if you look up Chrome OS Flex, and you install the Chromebook Restore plugin to Chrome, and you go in there and tell it you want Chrome OS Flex, and it'll write it out to the thumb drive, boot off the thumb drive, and you can install it, just like if it was a Linux distro. I didn't try to do, well, put it this way, if you're going to intend on doing like a dual boot with this in Windows, I don't think that's going to work, because it pretty much just wipes out the drive. So, but main reason I did it is I have a friend at church. He's having issues with his Chromebook, and he was asking me for help. And I'm like, I don't know, didn't know enough about Chrome OS to help him.
What was the problem?
I think with him, I think it was something with his printer. You know, we're trying to get a printer to talk to it over the Wi-Fi. So,
was it, you know what I've noticed? And this was really weird. My wife set up the printer, and it was really easy. She just like went in to add the printer, right. And it was there, available.
Down the network and all that, yeah, yeah. Right?
And then like a couple weeks later, she went to print, she couldn't print. But I thought something wrong with the printer. Went through, reset it all up again, you know, mucked around, made sure I could see it on the network, and it was fine. Then she was able to print. I noticed when she said the other day that she couldn't print, it wasn't showing up. It's really weird. Like, you go in to print, but it automatically defaults to, like, saving as a PDF or downloading it to, like, one of your drives or whatever it is. Right. And then you have to, like, you would expect that there would be a drop down when you hit the drop down that the printer would be listed in there. But you have to go to there's another option. I forget exactly what it is. You click on that option, and then it opens up this other window, and then you can see the printer in there, and then you select the printer. It wasn't very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I was kind of weirded out about that, but it was there. Can't be perfect at everything, though, right?
Nope.
So why would you want to run Chrome OS as opposed to Linux?
For me, I don't. The only reason I wanted to put it on there so I actually had a good example that I could look at.
Does that come with a full-fledged like Google Play Store and everything?
I don't. It will not play like the Android. Like, you won't work with the Android apps like
It is basically just a Chrome browser.
Yep. And it's got shortcuts for all the Google things, like you can launch a Google Keep in a window and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I do. I could see how it could be good for like really, really old hardware.
Yes.
Can you do like Netflix on it?
I think so. I'd have to try it again, but I think the last time I had it out, I did try it and I think it worked, but so not that it doesn't work well on Linux anymore, because it does. So.
Oh yeah, no, I just was wondering if
Widevine came with it.
Yep, Widevine. Yep, that's what it needs. But
isn't that in like Google Chrome?
Should be. It's not always the case. It depends on like.
Well, no, like the Google Chrome you get from Google.
Generally, it is. On that, like now, I know in Chromium OS or Chromium browsers, it's not always there. Like I can put Chromium on my Raspberry Pi 4, and it's not going to play Netflix. It'll play YouTube though, which is weird.
Well, but YouTube doesn't require Widevine.
Well, that's true, but yeah. So it's. Good to like if you have someone you like you want to like actually our good friend Chad Ricker who I'm friends with on Facebook, he says he thinks he's gonna do that for his son because he's got God, that kid's probably in school by now because he was a baby just not that long ago, it seems, but we're getting old, man, so Luke's gonna be 23 next week.
Yeah, Firefox has the plugins because I'm able to see Netflix on Firefox.
Okay.
Yeah, but is there a Firefox OS?
I don't think so. At least not now. There used to be at one point.
Yeah, I was gonna say wasn't that like supposed to be more for phones though?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Firefox OS. I forgot old about stuff, that. Man. Mm-hmm. Sailfish. Sailfish is still out there, isn't it?
Yeah. Sort of. You can still put it on like the Ubuntu, well, not the Ubuntu phone, but the system. No. That's not it. I have one and I can't remember what it's called right this second.
The OnePlus?
Phone.
Oh,
Nexus 7? Yeah, you can put it on the Nexus 7 too, I think. But the Nexus 7 tablet, somebody figured out how to get Android 12L running on that old thing.
Really?
Yep.
That breathed a little bit of life into that thing.
It might. I don't know how well it would perform.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could run like crap. I don't know.
Well, you can only hope. Damn.
Yep. All
right, should we talk about that article you posted? That was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Written by our friend Stephen Von Nickel. It was initially just done as an innocent protest where it would just kind of throw up a message. But the Java package maintainer, RIA evangelist Brandon Nozaki Miller, wrote and published an open code NPM source code package called Peace Not War. And that didn't really do anything initially, but then he added code that would delete the file system of any computer with a Russian or Belarusian IP address. And this is bad juju because it's basically using code as a weapon.
Yeah, so it's malware, if you read the what's the SYNK, I think is the company, Sync.
Right.
If you read their write up, which was pretty well a pretty decent write up of it, they go through and SNYK Snake. I don't know how you pronounce that.
I would say sink, but yeah.
Well, it's S-N-Y, so snick. I don't know. It's the sound that Wolverine makes when he pops his claws almost. Snick. so it's pretty interesting. This is attached to Node IPC.
Right. Which is part of Node.js and everything else.
Well, it's a library in Node.js, and it's used by a lot of different projects. The biggest one was Vue, and they attached he's the maintainer for both of those, Node IPC and the what he created, the Peace Not War package in there. And then what they had done was, initially it was just putting a message on the desktop that said, of the user, that would say Peace Not War. And later iterations would go through, depending on where you had your Node application running from. So Snick broke it down and saw that it was looking in the current directory, up one directory, and up two directories, and it was reading all the files in there and then writing back out to those files. If it was a file, it was writing back out to those files heart emojis, I think it was, and Peace Not War. So anything that existed two levels up from the current working directory of where you were running the Node application from would be overwritten if the file system allowed the application to do that. And it only triggered for IP address ranges in Russia or Belarus.
Yep.
And the thing is, so he had published on the GitHub page for both applications, or both repositories, I think it was. The first one, the Peace Not War, was just like about that. But in the IP or the Node IPC repository, he had put in there that it is your responsibility as the user of the application to vet the code. He put that disclaimer in there while he had been doing this. I don't think it was direct. It might have been right around the first commit or not. And basically he was saying, you should never trust any open source software or any software without vetting the code first. And too often people are not taking the responsibility to vet the code. So now, I don't think that justifies at all what he had done. Not saying that it does, but it was interesting that he had that in there. Then he switched it over to a new license from, I think it was under MIT license, to the Don't Be a Dick license. Which actually, I think it's dbad.org, is Don't Be a Dick license webpage, DBA.
While he was busy being a dick.
Right, basically, yeah.
Now, it's interesting that if you look at the Don't Be a Dick license, what is the page? dbad-license.org. The interesting thing about it is there's only three rules in it. It's like, do whatever you want with the original work, just don't be a dick. Being a dick includes but not limited to copyright infringement, selling unmodified original with no work done or so whatsoever, you know, taking the original and passing it off as your own and selling it, modifying the original work to contain hidden harmful content that would make you a proper dick. So it's interesting that he changed it to this license, but he actually violated 1C. Do whatever you like, you know, but don't be a dick. And being a dick includes modifying the original work to contain hidden harmful content.
Yep.
So I think, so I,
Did they actually remove it yet?
Yeah.
If you look at the repo, I believe it's they've reverted the branch. So this occurred in the 10.1.0. I think it's 10.1.01. And no, 10.1.1. So versions 10.1.1 through 10.1.3 all have the problem.
Right.
And yep. When I looked at the repo, it looked like they reverted back to the 9.0, I think they did.
Right.
But anything before 10.1.1 is saved. Now, I heard...
Actually, 10.1... yeah, here I'm looking at the CVE right now. 10.1.3 is the patched version, so anything less than but not equal to 10.1.3.
So okay, 10.1.3 is patched. They removed it in 10.1.3.
Correct.
Yeah, so, and I know that some other people were forking it and building a package off of that instead of using the, you know, trusting that. But yeah, so you can do that and hopefully mitigate any problems that you may have.
Yep. And it's a 9.8 on the criticality, the CVE scale, so it's a pretty bad one, you know, considering that it was literally done deliberately. and no matter what you think about the situation between Russia and the Ukraine, it's horrible. Either way, it's horrible for the Russian citizens who don't support it. It's horrible for the Ukrainians who are getting attacked, all right? And it's horrible to think that somebody would think that's a right thing to do in form of protest, because you're going to my biggest thing with this is they could have possibly impacted hospitals and other people inside Russia or Belarus that weren't even involved in the conflict.
Exactly. It's primarily innocent people.
Right.
Have nothing to do with any of this.
And it gives people ideas like that says, well, what if we do that to the U.S.? You know, it's very possible because there are a lot of
dangerous precedent on a lot of levels. It's bad.
Yep. And what incentive does this give companies to adopt open source when people can do stuff like this?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It erodes the trust.
Exactly. You know.
But you could also say, again, I'm not justifying anything that this guy did, you know, saying that what he did was at all right. The one thing that you can do, and he was right about this, is if it's open source code, you could vet it yourself, which is a lot more difficult, you know, because companies, that could happen in closed source software by companies too, and it has happened. But, you know, when this happens, when they do stuff like this, it does erode the trust and it makes adoption a lot more difficult. It destroys what we strove
to get. Look what one person can do with open source software.
Yeah. Yep. And it's also
one bad agent can screw you over with open source software.
The other interesting thing about that is, I mean, I wonder how much he thought this through, because essentially he's put a black mark on his name, and what company is going to trust him after this?
I wouldn't.
You know, and
anything he ever writes.
And then the person, you know, if he's the sole gatekeeper for that module, which I should have looked, I don't know. But if he's not, if there's a team of people other people that he's entrusted to have, you know, approvals to merge software, and he's not just like the overall dictator to that project, you know, that puts them in jeopardy too. Because now, you know, what they did, they're complicit in this change that was made also. They might not have done anything, but they're going to be painted with the brush of guilty by association because they didn't stop it, which I don't know how their repo is controlled, whether he just snuck it in there and nobody was paying attention or what. But it's interesting. If you look at the comments, if you go to the repo, there's like when you go to the issues, reported issues page, which I have frequented those in the past couple of weeks for many repos, trying to solve problems. But it's like just five pages of people yelling at them and trying to have discussions or, you know, I don't know. Terrible idea. Terrible idea. And it only hurts, makes the problem worse.
Agreed. Major fuck up.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Just like Microsoft.
Now, is this... So what exactly happened here, Joel? Tell us what exactly happened.
I need to find the article, but essentially, heck, I don't know why I'm actually Googling it, because I got it on my profile on Facebook.
Yeah, that profile.
Hackers leaked 37 gigabytes of Microsoft source code.
Primarily for Bing?
Let's see. It says post on Monday night by LAPSUS $hacking group or Lapsus. A torrent of a 9 gigabyte zip archive was made available to download. The 7-zip archive was said to contain over 250 internal projects acquired from Microsoft. Data was allegedly sourced from Microsoft Azure DevOps server. A Telegram screenshot released by the group on Sunday and seen by Bleeping Computer depicted the source code in the projects covered a range of high-profile internal projects, including code relating to Bing Search, Bing Maps, and the Cortana Virtual Assistant. So basically, Cortana, since the Cortana Virtual Assistant, I don't know how much of Cortana lives in their cloud, but you know, you got the Cortana voice assistant that's part of Windows since Windows 10.
So they didn't. So it sounds like what happened was they compromised an account, a GitHub account that had the access to all this stuff, right?
That is, I think it was. Well, I think it was an internal DevOps server.
So it was. Because I'm looking at another article that said they broke into a GitHub account and stole 500 gigabytes of data.
Yep. I mean, the odds of this actually going to be contributing to malware or anything, probably pretty remote, because you know, it's not like you can download their source code and immediately look at it and say, oh, let's write this. You know, it's... You got to be familiar with code before you can write exploits to it. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not possible. It's definitely possible. But, you know, it's, you know, it just makes me wonder how much more, you know, could this actually cause them to think and maybe just release it anyway? You know, that's the only thing I'm thinking of. It just depends on how much internal properties or internal only things they have, I guess, on whether they would just decide just to release more just to fix it so that everybody can look at it. But I guess they already can, at least of the stuff that's been released. But I'd like to find out more about how the breach happened, because I think it'd be interesting to find that out.
I mean, everything I've seen says they compromised an account. It sounds right. Like, heck, that could have just been, what is that called?
Social engineering?
Yeah, it could have just been social engineering. They just, all you need to do is just get like, especially if somebody doesn't have multi-factor authentication or something like that on there. You just need to get, like, just one account, or they use the same password everywhere, so you can get
right.
If you get like their email account, you get the GitHub account, and then you can go in there and make, I don't know.
Oof. Yep. But I guess the same group also got 190 gigabytes of data from in early March from Samsung, as well as other attacks against Mercado Libre, I should say, NVIDIA, Ubisoft, and Vodafone.
They've been busy.
Yes, they certainly have.
I hope they're making their money.
Wonder if they're based out of Russia. It's another odd thing that the Microsoft has done, not that it really matters to many people here, but they've also decided that with a future update of Windows 11, that if you're running your Windows 11 on unsupported hardware, even though it runs just fine, they're going to put up a watermark on the screen because you're running on unsupported hardware.
That's stupid.
There's literally laptops that are 3 years old that is unsupported hardware. In fact, if it wasn't for the fact that my Surface Pro 6 wasn't made by Microsoft, the hardware inside of it is unsupported hardware. But because it's a Microsoft device, you know, you can't have that. At least I think it is. I'd have to go back and check, but that's what I thought. Because there was, when they released Windows 11, there was a skepticism on whether it was going to actually be supported on the Surface Pro 6 and below.
It's a really great way to let people know that they have no control over Windows.
Oh, of course they don't. No. And I don't pretend that I do, you know, but. So, I mean, yeah, that's a silly thing. I don't understand. It's like they think they know best, but yet then they have things like, for example, they still have as a default they hide like EXE and other file extensions within Windows Explorer, which I think that's the first thing I do when I get a machine is I turn that crap off. So, just so I don't get caught by hidden EXE. At least for the Windows machines I have to use. Or what? There's a couple I want to use, but. But, and it kind of, you talk about like being locked out of things and walled gardens and crap like that. I have some friends of mine, like I have one of my friends that I work with on itechgear.org and the itechgear.org weekly podcast, which we're really not weekly, we're biweekly. That's just what we call it for now. But he's for the most part retired from like real jobs, but he's volunteers at doing IT stuff for senior centers and stuff like that. Well,
hold.
Yes.
Oh wait, go ahead, finish up.
Yeah. So he had a friend who she's in her 90s, and her husband just died. All right. Well, her husband had an iPad that was tied to his iTunes account, and he wants to reset it so that she can set up that he can help her set up an iTunes account of her own on, so she has control of it and all that stuff. Well,
nope.
She doesn't have the password for his account, and he can't reset that device. That's Apple. Go ahead.
I was just looking for more information about the Shiny Hunters, and so they have an entry on Wikipedia.org, and there's a list of notable data breaches, and it says in May of 2020, they claim to have stolen over 500 gigabytes of Microsoft source code from the company's private GitHub account, and they published 1 gigabyte to a hacking forum. Cybersecurity experts doubted the claims until analyzing the code.
and then they agreed. Microsoft said that they were aware of it and that they later secured their GitHub account, which the Shiny Hunters report is being unable to access any repository at the time.
So this is the second time this has happened? Like the same thing?
Looks like it, yeah.
Oh, like, hack me once, shame on you. Hack me twice, shame on me. That's not good.
But when you have a private GitHub account, it's like, that's GitHub. That's, isn't that just like a public website now that you can sign up for services?
But I mean, it's
right.
And that's, you know,
on the open internet.
I don't think that there's nothing that says that they hacked GitHub. They just compromised an account, and that like I said, that could just be getting somebody's credentials, which is not that difficult apparently, because people are doing it all the time. You would think anybody that would have access to the Microsoft private GitHub account would know better.
And have two-factor and all that jazz.
Or, you know, so again, they haven't gone into details about exactly what they did, but this sounds like it's the same thing they did. It's not like they compromised all of GitHub. It was just access to Microsoft's private account or private repositories because they got compromised somebody's account for the second time in 2 years.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I keep forgetting that Microsoft owns GitHub now. Damn.
Yeah. Well, they've owned it for more than 2 years now, haven't they? Oh, wait. Right. Did they buy it? When did they buy GitHub?
Actually, 4 years.
You said 4 years ago?
2018.
Well. What are you going to do?
Yep. Must be why we're using the heck out of Visual Studio when we're editing stuff in GitHub for Jenkins / we're doing some ZapCD stuff now. Although that's kind of the ultimate thing of what we're moving for, right? We're kind of in a limbo. We still have Jenkins for a little bit longer, but we're doing a lot of stuff with Zap, and that's like one of the things. I was on the call, but of course, since I'm a lead, I'm being called in three different directions. Plus, we're short management, so I'm kind of acting as it not. That's one thing I might want to send a boss a ping about and says, "Hey, you might want to give me the rights to approve things in place of you if you're ever out like this, because." My boss had his basement flooded up in Michigan where he lives. So he's got a mess on his hands. But so we're doing a lot of that. And, of course, since I was being pulled in multiple directions, I couldn't sit and really pay attention to what was being done. But basically, we ended up using Zap. We deployed both Rabbit and Tomcat to the same server. I think the only thing we had to do after that was build the WAR file for our messaging adapter that is wrote by our company. And we have to incorporate an API key that we get from a tenant that's in the cloud that data gets sent to. Our client has the control and can log in and do all that stuff, but we can't log into it. They have to and give us the API key. So, but I've built the thing before, but I haven't. The bad thing is I haven't done it the same way twice. One time I did it with a local Ansible VM. Another time I did it with but actually more times than once. I take it back. I did it with Jenkins twice. So But then now we're switching to Zap because I, for some for reasons, I'm not 100% sure, but that's above my pay grade. I don't mess with that stuff. I just have to learn how to use it. So, but Zap is interesting. That's for sure.
Wait, is that what I thought? Isn't Zap an open source scanner, security scanner?
No, hold on.
So it's not it's not the OWASP Zap.
No.
Because I'm not finding anything about it. I guess it would be a continuous integration tool, right? Did they get you?
No.
Because I've never heard of Zap.
I'm trying to find it. Yeah, I'm trying to find it.
Is it part of, like, another product?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I'm starting to wonder if it's an internal thing that we wrote.
Oh, my goodness. Nothing is more fun to deal with than internally written tools sometimes. Oh, boy.
Well, wow. There is one thing. We have this other Slack bot that we wrote where basically we'll say, we can say things like Lucy bot, please deploy this Ansible code. So then it'll kick off everything and run the Ansible. And the one way we can monitor it as it does its job is through AWS CloudWatch. So we can see the things actually getting deployed. So I'm still early in learning a lot of that architecture right now. In fact, not this week, or next week, but the week after we have a training week where I'm going to get to learn more of that stuff. One thing I need to figure out is if they're going to do a chaos engineering thing. That's one thing I highly recommend is you do something like that in your teams because it really gets people to think. So basically what it is, at least for us, is a senior level or tech lead will go in and make a modification to like an internal server to break it. And then the rest of the team has to figure out how to fix it. So, and usually we try to touch on things that have been happening a lot lately, like we've had things like maybe this one I don't know how we can deal with, but I had them mess up like LDAP connections in our application. You know, they put them in the wrong order or something like that, so logins don't work. Or another one is one client wants all these files copied over as part of the clone, and that's the only client that does that. So we could mangle the permissions or something just to get them to look at it and think about it and realize that, oh yeah, I could do this stuff. I don't have to constantly ping the senior or tech leads to get things to help me do things. I can work on this and figure it out on my own. So. And I like Dunos because I usually don't have to do nothing during them except for doing the break.
Maybe, Joel, so, maybe it's not Zap. Maybe it's an Australian company named Paz. And just when it comes up here, it gets maybe, reversed. Yeah. You know, there's a Peter 64 throwback right there. I wonder if he still listens. You might be laughing right now.
No, and I know. I follow him on Facebook, and you and him would definitely get along. He's been doing a lot of reloads lately.
Peter 64. He's a great guy.
What caliber is he doing?
I'd have to look, but I know his daughter shoots, and I think I want to say I think his wife does too, if I remember. He also will occasionally post one of his a picture from his quads every once in a while and other things. I think he still mows grass too for a living.
Yeah, he was like the groundskeeper on a golf course in a country club.
Yep. Mr. Peter Cross, Peter 60. Yeah, he's been posting pictures from his telescope. They're pretty awesome looking, actually. See, the last picture he worked on was, it looks like he got a new scale. He's got more astronomy now. A new scale that he uses when he's loading the
Oh, we're still talking about Peter 64.
The reloads, yeah.
What happens is Peggy. He takes a spent shell and puts it in there, and then when you fire the gun, the bullet comes back in the gun and rebuilds the shell. Isn't that how it works down there?
Not quite.
Another one for Peter 64. I miss Peggy.
So at this point, I think I'm probably... See, one bad thing for me this year, other than, you know, I don't know how stuff...
We need some more people on the show.
We do need that. We need to get other folks to talk to from time to time. Famous, like, developers and stuff, so we can ask questions. But we got Southeast Linux Fest coming up in June.
Is that virtual or in person?
It's in person.
No. Is that the same place it always is?
Yes. Yes, it's the same place it always is. Sheraton. Charlotte
That's
Airport.
Right. Charlotte Airport, Sheraton.
Yep. I'm thinking about going down. We'll see. The bad part is that MRF, or Midwest Rep Rap Festival, is also in June, a few weeks later. So that's a little closer to me, in Goshen, Indiana, which is in the middle of nowhere. But that one's actually, I think that one's totally free this year. I thought you used to have to pay like $10 to go to it.
Is that MRF's conference?
I might be wrong, though.
Is MRF from-
no.
Murph heads down there and talk about Red Hat and Fedora.
No, it stands for Midwest Rep Rap Festival. And a Rep Rap printer is basically a printer built in an open design, like a Creality or an Ender or something like that. Although it's far more than just that. Like, you got folks from E3D that come there. Unfortunately, one of their major people at E3D, which is a 3D printing company, passed away. Mortimer, what is his name? Mortimer. If you watch a lot of the 3D channels, 3D printing channels on YouTube, you'll see his name mentioned many times.
So you're going down there to give him buy him a beer for his work?
I can't because that guy's dead, but he died. That's over in Indiana. But I'll probably
stop by and see Pegwall.
Yeah, I could pick him up if he really wanted to go. But
so you're gonna go to MRF instead of Southeast Linux Fest?
No, I think I'm gonna go to SELF instead of MRF.
So. Oh my goodness.
Mostly because it's been years since I've seen anybody like
you,
Jeremy, or his pup, his big old dog.
Oh yeah, you. It was weird. You weren't there for the was it the 10th anniversary or so? Yeah, it would have to be the 10th anniversary.
I was.
Were you there with Dave Gates and Chad?
Uh huh. Yep.
Oh yeah, that's right. You were there. There was a lot of people I didn't recognize there, like except for Dave Yates and Chad, and and a few other people.
Noah from Ask Noah was there. A few other people were there. I know.
Wait, Graybeard at the tent?
I don't know. I'm not an IRC. We can ask him because he's probably an IRC.
he'll respond in a minute. He'll respond in a minute. Yeah, he was there. That's right. I was pretty sure because I hadn't seen him in a long time, and then that would have been where I saw him because I haven't been to Ohio Linux Fest in a while either.
Right. I haven't either because even last year I just didn't want to go.
Man.
Well, like I've said before, it's harder to go to a show when it's happening right in your own town because your family thinks, oh, you're still sleeping here, so you can do shit, right?
That doesn't happen for me. I would just get up and go. And my family would be like, where are you going? I'm like, don't worry about it, and slam the door and ride out. No, my would be like, go have fun. Don't worry about things. Whatever it is you needed to do, we'll be here when you get back. I'm like, well, thanks.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't always work, but.
Yeah. But anyway.
Well, the couple hours is all I can get. The problem is Linux Fests are usually longer than a couple hours. And that's kind of, well, and see, Linux Fest, like, one of the things I like to do when I go to a Linux Fest, especially since we haven't had a table in a while, is actually go to talks.
Yeah.
Because when we had the table, could we ever do that? Nope. Yeah. We were always being the table. So, just going down to Ohio Linux Fest for a couple hours, it would be just about all I could get. And the thing is a lot of times there's people there that when I'm there at a couple hours, I just can't see. Basically, it's only worth me going down there for the expo. And since the expo has been pretty kind of light, even in the years that weren't pandemic years, you know, it just wasn't too useful for me because I can't dedicate a whole day, you know. It just when it's in Columbus, I just can't dedicate a whole day. That's the only thing. Cause got other things I gotta do. The family comes before.
Gotta go
unfortunately
fishing.
Everything. I want to go fishing now. Actually, I was gonna go. We were gonna go to Kelly's, but that fell through. I think we're gonna probably do
that
again.
That big pond they have down there in the middle of Hershey. I don't know if you catch anything good.
No, there's not much in there.
Chocolate fish.
In Spring Creek, there's no.
It's filled with those.
There's
fish.
Spring Creek in the park, but I mean I don't think they'd let you bring in a fishing pole. You might. About the only thing you might catch is carp.
Sneak in the pocket fisherman. That thing right there.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, just wait, Murph. I don't know if he's. I know he was engaged, but I don't know if he got married yet. But you just wait until you get married, and then you'll find out why you can't go to a Linux Fest.
See, he's not married yet.
Yeah, not yet. Okay, all right. But I have met her, and she is. Yeah, she has been at Linux Fest. I did see her at either the 10th anniversary itself or the one after. I can't remember which one of them you were at. And she was there too. But yeah,
I wonder how Art's doing.
Art?
Yeah.
Art.
I wonder what he's
sorry.
Doing. Art, the guy who I went to I'm gonna think it was Southeast Linux Fest. He came down, Art V. Vinton, and like right before he left, he stunk up my bathroom.
Oh,
remember Art? He was hilarious. Art was good.
I remember the one that I think it was one of the last ones that happened over in Spartanburg, and Dave shared his room with 330. Or I think he let 330 crash in the room. And he took off his shoes, and Dave's like, man, the dude's feet stink. That one, and then many Ohio Linux Fest where we just go in the elevator, and you're standing next to Dan, and all of a sudden the whole elevator clears out as soon as the door opens. And Dan's in there by himself because he just blew it up with one of his bean farts. When he's not Dutch ovening his wife.
I said to my wife, I said, I try to kill you every night, but you just keep getting stronger. Man, because my gas can be so terrible. I pity my wife. Well, anyway, what time is it? Oh, we got plenty of time. Ooh, I'll tell you what. I was talking last week about the joys of OpenTelemetry and trying to fit it into a Next.js application. So I've pretty much settled on doing it the way that is recommended in various different pieces of code. It's just examples. It just seems like a terrible way to do it. It's to use the require-r option on when you're running a node, when you're running node itself to fire it off. And so it's like, it's working fine. I got it working in a Docker container. It's doing what I want to do for tracing. We're seeing traces. The metrics thing is still a problem. I don't know why it's not making it to Google, or I don't know even where to find it in Google, which is odd because their documentation says it should be here, but I can't find it. But what's weird is, and I had to open a ticket with Google about this, in OpenTelemetry, you can set what they call attributes. So, and here's the confusing thing, like, they're called attributes in OpenTelemetry, but in the Google side of things, they're called labels. Now, there are labels in OpenTelemetry, but a label is a key value pair where the value is a string, whereas an attribute is a key value pair, but the value can be a Boolean, an integer, a string. It supports different types. So for some reason, when I set the attribute, which is the application name, and the reason why I want to set that is that if you're at all familiar with some of the other applications I talked about, like Zipkin, Sumo Logic, Jaeger, Datadog, AppDynamics, that pulls in trace information, and you want to filter out and look at specifically your application and traces from that. Just the UI on those applications are 1,000 times better than the Google Cloud Trace UI, which has a filter option, and it'll allow you to filter by a label with a value, but for some reason, all the custom attributes or labels that I set are not in the filter list, even though I clearly see the label listed in their UI under the trace. So it's quite annoying. And there's no documentation or anybody reporting that there's a problem. So I don't know what's up, like why it just doesn't work. Right, Joel? It just doesn't work.
Yep.
And it's weird because if you follow their examples and you get their examples to work, right, I'm not doing anything different other than
sending a custom label that I would like to see filtered. So I don't, I know the label's making it there. So my thought is there's nothing that I'm doing wrong or nothing that I'm doing incorrectly in the code. I just don't think that their Trace UI is for some reason reading those custom labels, and they're just taking, I don't really know, because the weird thing is the non-custom labels, the ones that were set by the auto instrumentation, the Trace itself, those are showing up, but not the custom ones. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they come back with. They'll just tell me to go F off, right? They'll say, go use Sumo Logic. They'll say, take your former Jenkins using GitHub action asses out of here and use Zap.
I'll do some more research and see what it is.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be interested.
I mean that's, and because it's, so we don't execute it directly that way. You know, it's, we have a whole bunch of like front end stuff that's been built to help run it. So, like this Slack bot.
Yeah, you love that Slack bot, don't you?
Well, it can be useful. So, because eventually, I think one of the things that we're going to be able to do with it is actually schedule it. So, I can tell Lucy about schedule it, and then it'll be scheduled, and then it'll just run. And I think they're also trying to work on it so that it can also write the Slack ticket and close the Slack ticket once the automation runs. So that way everything's still in Slack. Or not Slack, Snow, I mean. Slack ticket. Snow ticket. Which I hate snow. Anyway.
Oh, man.
That's like, I found out one more thing that I don't know if you have it in your snow. One more thing that I found out that our snow has, and the first time I've ever gotten included in one of those, is they had an ESC ticket. You know what that is, right? Or maybe you don't.
An escape ticket to get you the hell out of that?
It's escalation. When our client like thinks we're not doing things fast enough, it doesn't even have to blow SLA. They can actually open an escalation ticket if they need something done quickly. So, and today I had to do that by adding a user, because the client.
Oh, they don't raise an escalation ticket when you're not doing your job in time.
They should, but that didn't happen here.
No, well, because I have, you know, SLAs, and some of those SLAs are you know, 15 right. minutes, some of them are 30 minutes, some of them are an hour.
That's a valid one. Yeah.
Yeah, some of them are an hour, some of them are even 4 hours, but you'll have people trying to escalate it in like 30 seconds after they sent the email.
Right. Yeah.
Why aren't you working on this already? What's taking so long?
Because I have more than one client and a few hundred servers that I got to take care of.
I literally had somebody complain about my team, not mine, but my team's response time on something that we had responded within 2 minutes with.
Within
and
SLA.
They tried to blame us. Literally, right. It was within 2 minutes, and they tried to blame us that things were taking so long. And
yeah, no.
If you looked at the emails, it kind of looked like it was an hour before we responded. And then you looked again and realized that we were in a completely different time zone. And that's why it looked like there was an hour difference between the first email and the second. There was literally 2 minutes there. But nobody remembers that after you tell them, you know, this is what happened. They only remember that you got blamed in the first place.
That's right. That's right.
So it's your fault.
all our fault. We're supposed to just know everything, right?
That's what they pay you the big bucks for.
Yep.
When did that start?
They're paying Joel the big bucks. Not you, Joe.
Well, I'm sure they will.
Joel's
be.
Making eight figures.
No, I'm not making that. If he said six, you'd be right.
60 figures.
Not that many.
Per year?
Yeah.
Because I'd only work about 6 months and quit forever.
Well, yeah, if I got that for a year, yeah, it's same. But I don't.
I'd work like a dog for about 6 months, and then I'd retire.
There you go. Sounds ideal to me. Is either of you guys opened up an Ancestry.com account?
No, my dad has one, though.
Yeah, I'm still in the trial, and I'm trying to think if I want to keep it or not. Because a lot of the stuff... The only thing I'm really finding is, like, for example, exact times people died and when they were born and other information about my grandparents and other great-grandparents and stuff from the past that I'm finding really useful. But a lot of it I already knew. You know, I knew my great-grandfather was Howard M. Fulton. Howard Milton Fulton. Although we just called him Grandpa, you know. And I found out, pictures of him from the past, some of which I've never seen. Like, then I found one of my grandfather, my mom's dad, when he was 18. But then you also get to see things like the World War I draft record, World War II draft record, stuff like that. It's actually pretty interesting. I'm not sure if it's worth $25 a month, though.
That's a lot of money.
A month, yeah. Well, and then the worst part is, the worst part is if one of the things that you find in there is in a newspaper, there's another website called newspapers.com that they own, and you want to go look at that newspaper clipping. And they'll say, well, you can sign up for another, you know, add on to your Ancestry permission for another, I think it's another $15, I think, or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, why can't you just include that in one package? Because isn't that kind of information relatively open anyway? Because that's the thing that gets me about that. But
I don't know, $25 a month. That's a lot of I can't imagine that the information gets updated that
for your
much.
Genealogy, right? Yeah.
And I'm like, so once you look at it, like, what's the point of?
Yep.
Now.
Yep. Once you go as far as you want to go,
it does me absolutely no good because I was adopted, so it's not like. I would know. I'm not really that interested in the genealogy of my parents.
You probably don't want to know the your birth parent, maybe.
Well, I would be interested to know. I mean, yeah, but that ship I think is long since sailed. I don't know. But anyway, that's a lot of money, and then they charge you on top of it to look at the newspaper clipping.
Yeah, in some cases. You can at least still include that information, but...
Alright, well, I've been trying to find the right time to bring this in, but you won't believe what I have in front of me. You'll never guess.
Have you talked about it before?
No.
You have one of our game machines? No, wait, you've talked about it.
Well, you're pretty damn close, Joel.
Really?
Yeah.
iPad?
No, I have a 2017 MacBook Pro with some water damage in front of me. It won't turn on, so... I just got the back taken off. And I'm just taking a peek around right now. I do see some, like, water damage down in this one corner here.
What's water damage look like?
Corrosion.
Oh, it is corrosion.
Yeah. A little bit of corrosion around some of the screws, but then it's got these freaking tin plates on the top. Or tin covers on the top, so I can't see anything that's directly under that to see how far it goes. And the Torx bit on the inside are like T3s or something, and I have T2s, I have T4s, but I don't seem to have T3s.
Did you call Apple and thank them?
Yeah, I'm gonna call them right after the show and say thank you for using these shitty ass screws on the inside that make it impossible to do any work on this thing.
Wait, don't they have pentalobes on that too?
Pentalobes. These are all Torx screws, so they're the star head.
Okay.
You know what? I had heard somewhere along the line, not too long ago, that Apple has once again made available all their their documentation for that. And I remember when I was way back in like the mid 90s, I had access to that information, and I thought it was pretty decent for how to disassemble some of their stuff. Now, granted, when you disassembled the stuff back then, it was a lot easier, I think, overall than it is now because of how they're making it more difficult to replace parts.
Yep.
So you think you'll be able to revive that sucker?
Probably not. I will probably be completely unsuccessful in doing this. But you know what? I didn't pay anything to get it put in front of me, so.
Oh.
There's that.
That's not bad. I mean, who knows, though? I mean.
It's worth a try. It's free.
And if
Even if I got to order a kit to be able to take this apart properly, it's at least I'll have a kit on hand.
Right.
And then you'll have some pretty decent a pretty decent laptop, I think, put Linux on it.
If I can get it up and running. Yeah, I understand. Well, this is one of the ones with a touch bar. So I understand there are some issues getting everything running.
Just throw it right in the garbage can there.
Right in the garbage.
That's it. Say, no, not with a touch. This is bar without an escape key, proper escape key, isn't it?
Yep.
I wonder if they did get that to work with Linux, the touch bar.
Evidently there's some drivers out there, but I don't know how much functionality it has. I don't know anything at this point.
Now I know I read an article where there is a Linux distribution, ASHI, I think ASHI Linux, they have a beta that supports the M1 Max right now.
Huh. Was everything work but the Wi-Fi again?
Not beta, alpha, I should say, alpha.
Does everything work but the Wi-Fi? So like,
makes me wonder.
You can't connect it to anything.
Yeah, I haven't delved any further than that because I don't have one of those machines, and even if I did, I wouldn't risk it for an alpha. But
I think it was my old PowerBook. There was some when it came out, and I tried to put Yellow Dog, or I think it was Yellow Dog. It was PPC based,
right?
And it would all work, except there were problems with the Wi-Fi card, and then I think there was also problems with the trackpad. So it's like, if you wanted to use network, you'd have to connect a USB network card or Wi-Fi adapter to it, and then plug in a mouse. Then things would start working.
What was I looking at? Ubuntu 2204 jamming What is it? I have to remember what the code. It's Jam and Jelly, I think. Or no, yeah, Jam and Jellyfish. That's it.
You have it already?
Well, I installed the daily. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, you know that that's usually worked out pretty well for me. A few weeks before the release, and that way all you have to do is just update.
The beta hits March 31st, and then the current release date is April 21st.
Any noticeably big changes?
They added a graphical interface for getting the firmware updates. I guess that's for, what, FW Cutter, I think, or something like that. I can't remember. that's all based on Flutter. They GNOME 42, and by default, since that's an LTS as well, by default, if you do a fresh install, which I didn't do, but I was able to switch it. But if you do a fresh install, by default, it's going to be using Wayland instead of Xorg. I just simply switched to it. I did find out Kubuntu, which actually it's where it started, because it was my Kubuntu install. That updates as well to the next version of Fusion Desktop, whatever that is. I'd have to. Oh, I actually don't have it powered up right now. I tried to get Kwin working in inside Wayland, and it just didn't work. So it makes me wonder if for the Kubuntu that if they're going to go that route or not. I know Fedora has in their latest one. So Fedora, if you choose KDE Desktop, it's going to go to Wayland instead of Xorg. So, and I want to say it seems fast, but then I haven't had a problem with Xorg performance either lately.
Wait, so, it is using Xorg or it's using Wayland?
The KDE seems to be only working on Xorg for Kubuntu, but GNOME 42 can use Wayland, and I was able to switch it pretty easily. It's just a drop down on the GDM3 login page. You just go down, put your information in, then go down the drop down, and you can choose to run Wayland on top of GNOME instead. But other than that, I think they it's the first time they rolled out Ubuntu Pro, which I thought was server only, but I think you can put it on laptops and desktops now. I think I didn't delve too much into that, but because when the upgrades just simply and easily, even to a daily release, I just have no complaints. it just works. It's been a long time since I had a problem doing an Ubuntu upgrade. Long time.
Yeah. Wait. When was the last time? Wait. So you're doing... Did you do a fresh install for your upgrade, or did you do an upgrade?
I did an upgrade.
You did an upgrade.
Upgrade from 2110.
No, but I mean, so did you just do release upgrade or whatever it was? Was that it?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
They got it pretty good. I should fire that up this week online.
Actually, there is one thing, because it asked me if I wanted to preserve third-party repos.
Right.
Through the upgrade, and you're allowed to do that now.
Oh, you are?
Yep, in the past it was taking those out, like the Chrome repo and stuff like that. So, it seems to run pretty nice. I haven't played with it a lot because work, but...
well, that's... You gotta start wrapping up this show. I gotta get to bed.
Yes, we do.
I'm gonna fall asleep. But... Anyway, that's next week is the last show for March.
I thought this week was going to be the last show for March, but we still got one more show in March.
So this is the penultimate show for March.
There you go. You're going to be here next week. I mean, you're not going on your trip.
I'm not
going to
miss the show.
Yeah, but you're not leaving.
Yeah, it's just a weekend. Yeah, not leaving on Friday, so yeah.
All right. Well, I wish you and your son good luck with the new car. Joe, I wish you good luck with that Mac. He left the channel. He's too busy on that Mac.
Of course he did.
Yeah, so
and running for office. Go for it. Go, Joe.
And I wish everybody a happy week. We'll see you in 7 days. Thank you, Joel.
Evidently, my connection went to
absolutely. There he is.
Yeah, I was just wishing you good luck on it because we're closing out the show. I was wishing you good luck on getting that Mac revived.
How many days till election day, man?
May 7th, but early voting starts mid-April or something.
If you can vote in Allen, Texas, vote for Joe.
There you go.
He'll all fight right. for your kids.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll see you in 7 days. Here are your promos. Oh, I pressed the right.
He couldn't press the right button if you paid him.
I spaded and played the wrong
button. I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreCast. We talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making it pretty young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Ow.
Had some Raising Cane's tonight for dinner. That was good.
Who's that? Roast beef?
Chicken fingers.
Oh, chicken fingers.
Yeah, don't you? I thought you had one, right?
No.
Grove City is getting a sheet, which is like the Western Pennsylvania version of Wawa.
No, they should not be happy with that. I don't like sheets. Well, we had that like discussion. Sheets. I'm not a big fan of sheets. I mean, I don't mind I don't like their prepared food. I never
get the prepared food. I always order from the, where they make the sub for you right there.
Oh no, that's what I meant. The food that they prepare. I've never tried one of their subs. It's always been like I've tried, I think, a burger there, and they're I've good. Tried a chicken sandwich, and I just didn't.
The subs is where it's at.
Maybe one day if I'm in nearby a Sheetz and looking for the yum yums, I'll get a sub.
It's way better than a Red Hot Mama.
Nothing's better than a Red Hot Mama. It goes in easy and burns on the way.
Of course, if you ask my brother what's the best burger down by his place, and he'll say Cookout.
Cookout. Not a bad burger.
I have not had them, but
Cookout's really good. I like Cookout a lot.
Now, we are getting a Wahlburgers, but it's over at the casino that wasn't built on top of where the old GM plant was here in Columbus area. So that's where the Wahlburger is going to go. And I also happen to be like right across the street from his dealerships because he owns all the dealerships on West Broad Street now, including a Buick one. But how's that used car working out for about that one for age, I think?
No. Helena, and it's working out great.
Oh, Helena. Good.
It is
all right.
Working out great.
Good.
I gotta stop the recording so I can get the show out.
stop the recording. We fixed my son's car issue.
Oh, that's good.
Wait.
Yeah, we bought a new one.
Oh. Well, I guess that's what was the problem with the old one again?
It kept had an intermittent check engine light, and a big reason why I ended up doing it is because in a normal situation, I would have had them fix it. Lead time, just to get it to the point where somebody will look at it, is 2 weeks. Then 2 weeks after that, and then maybe another 2 weeks if you need parts. So we'd be without that car for 4 to 6 weeks. And I'm like, yeah, it's not happening.
Isn't this like this isn't the first time it's been in. Yeah, this wasn't the first time. This is like after, what, how many times now? And they still haven't fixed it?
Well, the first time back in November, they tore off, they put two new sprockets on it. And we also paid to have them do a timing chain on it. The timing chain, except for the labor, we had to pay for the timing chain. But, the rest of it is like $1,200 total in repairs, and we only paid like $500 for. Actually, probably more than that. But considering it's also a 2016, and it's 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 26 years old, so. And it was used when we bought it, so who knows what they did to it before then. So we got him a 2022 Trailblazer RS. Which I think he likes. I don't know. I'm trying to gauge his opinion on it, but the worst part is before she told him my mother-in-law, the third one I've had, decided she wants a dissolution from her marriage with my father-in-law, so we're still suffering the fallout from that.
Was that today too?
No, that was a Monday or Tuesday, I can't remember which. So yeah, but it's like, you know, I guess she's been gone for a couple weeks. Yeah, but the worst part is I don't know what we're going to do, because she had the car in her name. She had the washer and dryer was all on her credit too. She's getting rid of all that, so he doesn't have either of that. And he probably can't, well, where he's living, it's a two-bedroom, like, home for those, you know, for those older people, you know, senior citizens. Yeah, because, you know, he's getting close to 80. If he isn't already 80, I don't know. I don't remember how old he is. wife told me they were paying $600 a month for that. And that wasn't one of the income-based ones. So I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to try and find them something and figure it out. But I found out that she was probably a little bit racist too. They have two nephews that were biracial, and she used the N-word derivative when talking about them at least once.
Sounds like a nice lady.
Yeah. Well, she was nicer, but but yeah. I'm just, you know, like, furious at her. It's a good thing I'm probably not going to try it. I'm going to try my darndest not to see her ever again. Because I don't have very many nice words for her right now. But the upside is a week from Friday, we're going to Hershey on vacation. So just a little 4-day weekend.
We should probably get the show started.
Wait, you just came from a 4-day weekend, or you're going to a 4-day weekend?
No, going to a 4-day weekend a week from Friday. So I will be driving on April 1st, which is a good thing because April 1st, yeah, yes, next, not this Friday, but next Friday. Yeah, I'll be driving to Hershey then.
Oh, and it's a good thing too
because I'll be on the road on April 1st, the day the internet's, well, I don't want to say pretty useless. It's not like what it used to be, though, when we first started this show. In the times of Windows Crash Radio.
There we go. Windows Crash Radio.
Crash Radio. And we could, so see, topics we can talk about tonight are including the what was that? MPOC. We can talk about, I think we can talk about that one without getting political.
Absolutely.
Because
so,
it's not really.
No.
It's
got some,
and then Microsoft.
Some head scratchers there. Microsoft.
Yes, it sure did. It should.
What's Microsoft?
They had one of their GitOp servers compromised. 37 gigabytes of source code, including source code for Bing, and a few other things that are out in the wild now.
So now you can search Bing for the source code to Bing.
That's pretty funny.
And it won't come up with any results, but you
search
Chrome
OS.
Search Google and it will, right?
Right. Yep.
I guess
Chrome. I got Chrome OS Flex on an old laptop. We'll talk about that a little bit too.
All right.
Maybe. Yeah. Hey, this is weird. I did show prep.
Yeah. This is show 948, right? 948. Yes. Let's fire this off. Here we go. 948. Give me count around.